not adjust your radio frequency. This is not a test. This is the Artist First Network. Cool.
Welcome to another broadcast of Project Urantia. Yes, I did play the wrong theme music, but we won't tell anyone. A growing number of people around the world are coming to the conclusion that just perhaps celestial beings have been influencing the history of this planet since there's been a history of this planet. In my humble opinion, one man who may know more about this than just about anyone, it's our guest of honor every hour, it's Michael in Maui. Hi, Michael.
Hi, Z-Man.
I'm glad to be back with you. How's life in paradise this week?
Oh, it's pretty good. Went over to Japan and it was pretty good for the most time, but there's some very strong winds and rains that came through.
You mean meteorologically or figuratively? Okay,
just,
good.
Just weather was very interesting. Strong wind.
That's right. You were on secret assignment last week. Anything? Was it just a vacation or was it a revelation?
Well, it's a bit of both. It's interesting to see. I always tend to visit a temple, looking at the appraisal of those who do visit the temples and those who do anything there. And basically, I went to Shinto. Shinto is supposedly shrines that are a religion of Japan only. However, after researching it a bit more, it's very close to some Middle East religions, very close to archaic Judaism. The design of the temple, some of them follow very closely the design of a Judaic temple, ways in which they approach it and all the priesthood work. In fact, even the priesthood's garments are very, very close to some of the archaic ones. They walk around with some actual, I guess it looks like tassels that sort of fall off the ends of their garment that are, to me, like static discharging things, And then, of course, they carry around this whole, what would seem to be like very similar to the Ark of the Covenant type of deal. So I went over there and got warned. I wasn't being very respectful in some of the areas. I got warned that I shouldn't be. So not disrespectful, but at least understand that some of these people take their faith very seriously.
I guess I didn't really understand the religion of Shintoism. Isn't there an ancestral worship or connection in that religion?
Yes, there's ancestral connections to it. Primarily, the ancestral thing has a lot to do with there's ancestral connections to many of those that are linked back to the lost tribes. And Shinto, the Japanese are one of supposedly have many things that link it back to the lost tribes, of the northern lost tribes who were essentially chased out of Sumeria many thousands of years ago.
Gee, what if it turns out that all the different civilizations we've discovered or will discover around the world can all be traced back to the 12 tribes of Israel in the Bible? Don't the Mormons think American Indians are just another tribe that came through the Siberian Bridge when it was still walkable?
Yes, there's a lot of theory on that, and some of it plausible. But the most interesting one was the tribes in Africa. I forget exactly where they were located, but they're definitely Negroid. In other words, you look at them, they're dark-skinned, but genetically linked to the priesthood side, and of that genetics that are come right out of Caucasian-looking Jews.
You know, with the celestial influence and the genetic manipulation that's been going on, it's interesting to ponder the possibilities of all these different races and tribes. You know, they were pretty, one would think back then, they would be fairly isolated. You know, they weren't interbreeding a lot because of their location and a bit, you know, ability to travel. But I wonder, you know, were they, do you think the Celestials were still going at it genetically and experimenting and improving during those periods of time?
Well, they were supposed to have stopped. However, it's known that they didn't. And the wild type of genetic manipulation that created the giants may have stopped. However, because of genetics as a whole, about how that can turn around, it finds its way to have a different flavor, I guess, develop through the years of just being in the world. And because of that, yeah, like I say, you know, the most interesting one was you think of you know, those who are considered the Jews, or actually not Jews, but the Israelites, they were a mixed group, actually, made up of not necessarily pure line Jews, the tribe of Judah, but the other tribes were having many different localities involved, and along with them, some of the more archaic idol worship. So that was a problem that they had. And they ended up finding its expression. One of the things about that is that when I was at the Celestials, there were those who were, I mean, just like rubber stamp copies of each other. They looked very much alike and very hard to tell apart. And others who, just by their faces, looked like, absolutely looked like the different races upon this earth. I mean, you had those that had faces, I mean, very human-like faces, two eyes, a nose, a mouth, you know. Maybe the ears were somewhat withdrawn or nubby or not, didn't seem to be there at all. But just from their facial layout, they looked, some of them looked like they were Caucasian. Some of them looked like they were Asian or Middle Eastern. Some of, they just had that appearance. It was extremely interesting. And they're just sitting right next to each other, essentially dressed in exactly the same kinds of purple robes. But in any case, it gives me the understanding, and since I've been, you know, kind of going around the world looking at all these different temples, which are ancient evidence, to see what they perhaps have influenced, and some of which have been really old legacy. Shintoism in Japan is probably a real old legacy religion that somehow became claimed as original to Japan, and it's not, but it's very old legacy stuff that was left by the influence of the earlier involvement by the ancient teachers, Melchizedek teachers that came over. These are celestial teachers.
And if you'd like to send a question or comment to this or any Project Your Answer Show listeners, you can hit us up at dj@artistfirst.com. Put something in the subject line about Project Your Answer, because we get bajillions of emails every day. We don't want it to get lost. We have a real neat email that's come in. Can I read this to you at this point?
Sure.
It says, "Hi, Michael. I listen to your shows or discourses almost every day. They really help me to stay more attuned and comforted while whetting my appetite for more cosmic consciousness. Each session, it's as if you reach a point in which you become synced up with the server and the truth comes flowing out. What you do is truly a gift. I have had the Urantia book for the last 25 years and have read it quite a bit and can tell you that you have a great way of teaching from it in a way that is engaging and thought-provoking. I especially liked your talk on, quote, Jesus' admonition not to make the mistake of saving your outer life, quote, from last week's show. The way you describe and interpret spiritual truths so articulately with a gentle spirit is a great role model to us all. My question, are you familiar at all with the so-called magisterial mission? There are quite a few people who claim to be in touch with celestials, one in particular called Jorgensen. Some have called him Metatron. He is said to be the magisterial son who is to incarnate soon on Urantia to help guide us through this profound period of change. I'm not sure if I get an affirmative hit on this, but would like to know if you have any comments. A heartfelt gratitude and in loving service, Will Hunsinger from California.
Well, Will, thank you for the kind words, and I appreciate them. As far as Ron Johnson is concerned, I believe that there are many in the magisterial mission that actually are enlightened, or receiving enlightenment and knowledge. As far as Ron Johnson being one who will be coming into a physical form soon, that may very well be true. As far as his position, I don't know. However, there will be many teachers who will essentially come into the planet through natural means. In other words, they get to grow up here. The reason that there will be these higher beings who will grow up here is they will take on the challenge. Although they can comment on the challenge that we have as mortals living some few years, less than 100 years, physically, you know, growing up as a child that has, you know, defenseless child and could grow up anywhere. The challenge is that many of these teachers who have higher knowledge will themselves also be challenged and will also have to go through the mortal walk and add that as part of, you know, it's almost like a badge of courage to have gone through a very dangerous place, because many of our philosophies and what has been culturally accepted will be considered heresy in places in which civilization, or the civilization of the heavens, you might say, at least in the areas in which I was able to get my nose into and kind of get curious about. One of them was our involvement in our materialness. And that material concept on our planet, even our clothes and our fashions, artistry, how we express ourselves, is not existent in where I was in the New Jerusalem. And that probably would be appreciated. But our materialism and our economic machine of consumption and pushing the economic envelope in ways which try to bend people's minds and hearts and wills is a challenge, because it's like mind control. They've come to a point where the modern marketing has come to a point where you just got to go and get that fast food, and they show it to you just when you're hungry. Things like that. They control your subliminally many ways of making your decisions. Now, yes, they will come, and besides those that are already involved and not coming as a babe, not really mortal, but able to sit with you, perhaps at a bar right next to you, and discuss a few things. These will appear and disappear. Not sure if Morten Jorgensen will be either one of those, just given a physical body, much like the body suits that I saw on the ship coming back when Tannenella, they allowed me to go back and look at a human suit, which would, if they put it on, I mean, you would look just like anybody down the street. But in any case, there's other things involved here. The teaching is most important, and that, of course, is the greatest thing that we'll be involved in. And the next uplift will be a higher level of real understanding and consciousness. And that brings to mind, Z-Man, a little bit of what I was kind of been thinking about. Actually been given this understanding to give people a little bit of a heads up. And that's Jesus Christ actually telling his disciples, you know, how much more he had to say that. It was John the disciple that wrote it down, and it says, you know, I have much to say to you, more than you can bear right now, or more than you can understand. And these are the things that I often wondered about. I wondered about two things, which I, before my memory was opened up fully, and I remembered everything. And one of them was, what goes on in New Jerusalem? And what is it that Christ had that had a lot to do with saying what things I have more to say to them? And much of it involved the level of reality and technology, the level of realities that are and will be given to our planet, and for ourselves, if it was spoken of those thousands of years ago, it would have been considered absolutely miraculous. But it's the technologies, and these are some of the things that he had to say. Not only the fact, they already knew that they were going to be giving their lives and suffering a lot for just bearing that truth, but what he had much to say was pointing out that a lot of that was shown to me, a little bit was given to me, and that is some of the things and the reasons why I'm on this, given this this voice here to be able to express some of those things that have been hidden for so long.
We have an email from Pakal in Lyons, Ohio, and Pakal says, "Dear Michael, the quote last unquote cycle of the Mayan 260-day sacred calendar called the Dzogchen, if I say that correctly, starts this Thursday, and that equals 260 days until December 21st, 2012. He is our official timekeeper. I guess it's more of a comment than a question, but keeping in line with that comment, do you believe, Michael, that a year from now, or 5 years from now, or 10 years from now, do you think people will look back at a period of time and divide that period of time by something that may be going to happen on or after December 21st? Is that, you understand my question?
Not fully. Is there the preciseness of a time mark or a benchmark?
No, talking about the importance of an event. You know, like we mark our time now by the date of the birth of Christ, even though it's probably off a couple of years. There was AD and BC. By the way, if you don't know what AD and BC stand for, AD stands for after the divorce and BC stands for before children. Okay, I'm joking, but now, getting back to serious, will something happen in this period of December 21st, 2012 that will be so miraculous or terrible or fantastic that future generations will see this as the tipping point, the time, you know, B.C. before Christ and A.D. after death or whatever that actually stands for?
Well, one of the things, first of all, was some people look at history in terms of precise events that happen, you know, 9/11. And even for me, 9/11 was essentially a type of answer to wondering when would the end day start or be marked by. And of course, that I've spoken of before, that was given as a vision to another person who was close to me at the time and who came over and remarked about it. As far as precise counts, as precise times, remember that during my official ministry, which wasn't essentially really long, it's about spanned exactly 7 years into two different periods, two 3.5 year periods, and every cycle in since meeting Tan and Ella has taken 7 year cycles in which these events move. So I'm actually moving by a type of cyclical calendar also. So just by my own experience and how the celestials have notched out for me my progress and my life, just weaving my normal life, my everyday life, into their cyclical timetable has been very precise. I could go over them, but it's not really that important. But it was marked out precisely in time spans that were within days of exactly 7 year periods.
Why do you think that is?
Because they have definite influences on what was to happen and how it would take place, and that these are essentially, I guess, points in which they have also perhaps been involved more closely. So that is an interesting reality as far as celestial counts and calendars go. So I don't put down the calendar as some that concept of the Mayan calendar as something as perhaps inaccurate. I look at it as a celestial calendar that was based on movement of information that definitely ancient man couldn't have come up with themselves, and were somewhat, you know, faithfully engraved in stone so that it wouldn't be lost. And there's a lot that was lost as far as the ancient teachings that came from the celestials themselves.
Yes, let's not get started on that. Spaniards were great at wiping out knowledge. Hey, and so is the idiot that burned down the library at Alexandria. To realize the damage one or two people can do to an entire species of creatures. Think about that for a minute. So where do you think you are in the current 3.5-year cycle, or 7-year cycle, depending how you look at it, I guess?
Well, you can do the math. You know, it was essentially back in 1972. Yeah, and in any case, the point I want to make was that each time I passed through that 7 years, it was a totally different approach in what happened to my life. It was and you know, even the teachings of seven psychic circles, and then using seven is actually a very interesting number. There was a recording that was made as a probe, I believe Cassini actually went through the rings or picked up radio or detected a radio signal type, and it came out like a garbled voice or something like that. But as I listened to it, I realized it was It went beep, 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 and then this garbled voice came out in the back, which passed, you know, through the rings. So the rings actually, rings of Saturn, actually had something recorded in it, or was able to be decoded in it. And this rip, 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 three came out, three ripped high-pitched tones or whatever, and this garbled voice. But this garbled voice was giving me some the interpretation, actually, and it's, it is something that said something like, these three are God for you. So the Trinity is even put down in were recorded in actually the rings of Saturn. So they use celestial things and even allow our modern technology to pick up things and then to be reinterpreted. And they use celestial events and celestial markers. So the long count and other the other calendars. I don't. Pascal can be our timekeeper right now, so understanding the calendar. But as far as understanding the event that will happen at that particular time, it will definitely change because there will be. It's like sometimes it's pretty sharp, pretty definite because of its coming into a different position in one's life. One's life before, like you said, after divorce, or
I
before
said
children. Those are actual, true, you know, interesting statements because they actually mark out a different event in your life, a different type of life that one leads. Similarly, that is something like what you're pointing out quite nicely and interestingly, is that we will be having a different life after that. Something will be added to it, not taken away, but added to it. So we'll have an additive influence in terms of our civilization, in terms of our consciousness here. So that's an interesting thing that will inevitably happen. And it could just simply be by this mass sighting that would be impossible to quell, to hide, to keep covered up. It was shown to me that that was their intention. Eventually, a grand sighting, and that sort of links together with he will come in the clouds of his witnesses. That idea.
Well, that certainly. You know, let me put it a different way. If Yellowstone blew up or a 2-mile-wide meteor crashed into the Pacific Ocean, all of civilization would again mark time with before that event and after that event. And I guess what I'm trying to coax out of our celestial friends is the, is something along that magnitude going to happen shortly? You know, I mean, let's face it. It's easier to keep people calm if they don't realize what's about to happen, right? I mean, and maybe ignorance is bliss in the truest sense of those words. Maybe it's better that we don't know that 3/4 of us are all going to be dead by this time next year. And I'm not suggesting that at all. There's no real evidence for anything happening that, in my opinion, so far, you know, being scientific about it. But your thoughts?
Well, my thoughts is that, you know, just coming back from Japan, I realized that there are those who are living, let's say, in one of the largest cities in the world, Tokyo, that have, you know, essentially structures, major structures that are designed to be pretty much earthquake proof. So they are putting together different types of survival kits. Not in which some which may indicate they may get, you know, covered by rubble or something by, you know, if an earthquake comes in, gigantic earthquake. And they're, I remember speaking to a person just last year, March, when I was in Japan. I was, different part of Japan, so we were far away. And I had commented on, you know, it's too bad that that had to happen, or that happened. And the comment back was, yes, it's not our turn yet. You know, it's as if they all have this understanding in Japan that they will get whacked eventually. And they just are grateful for what they have. They prepare for it. And then, as I said, in the cities, there are actually stores that are coming up, specialty stores that are coming up with a lot more survival gear that people just seem to put in their homes just for the sake of being able to live a life normally and say, well, if the water stops flowing, the electricity turns off, and the food is hard to get, at least I have some in reserve until it all starts up again. And this is the concept. Much of it is, it's not total devastation or total annihilation, but it would be a point of shutting down. Even in my position in the center of the Pacific, if the ships stop coming, well, there's going to be a shortage of various items that are needed for life to, or, you know, society to continue here in Hawaii, because we've come to a point where are definitely not living off the land. And more and more of the people around here realize that too, and have taken different roles in terms of how they approach this concept of survival, of the shutdown of our normal paradigm of modern civilized life, as the economic engine has to get reset. And along with that economic engine getting reset would probably be our industry, or a way of which it functions. So people just continue on life to prepare for somewhat, and when it comes down to being just blown up and completely annihilated, well, you know, you just look at the fact that your life will end one day, and it's just part of life, I guess, and that's how people continue on and make a little, because you don't want to be caught perfectly well and healthy and have nothing to keep you going because the stores are gone and everything is run out, you know. So that's what I've seen, and this it's essentially a new way of doing things, I guess. It's becoming more popular in a major city like Tokyo.
Well, thinking about places to be if the poop hits the fan, Hawaii isn't all that bad. Of course, much has to arrive by boat, but you guys are surrounded by food. You're surrounded by, it rains every day, you can collect water. And when it gets, you know, and you would be insulated from the mayhem on the mainland. You know, if it gets pretty bad, I would think your chances would be pretty good out there on the islands. What are your thoughts?
They would be. However, I did witness maybe 2 or 3 years ago the FEMA, I guess, maybe them or somebody else. It definitely was not our armed forces bringing in these huge, absolutely gigantic personnel, armored personnel carriers. These things are bigger than anything I ever seen put on the back of a lowboy. I mean, they were just all over that poor lowboy, way too wide and way too long. They're big, and they were bringing them in, and they were being trucked by people that did not have, they had uniforms, but not military. So they were taking them someplace, because there's thoughts that places like a city like Honolulu or things like that would have some problems, and they may need to disperse some riots and things like that, and have armored personnel carriers come through and put down some of these things if things get really bad. But I haven't seen that here on the outer islands of, you know, Maui, and the big island of Hawaii or Kauai, a little island of Molokai, and Lanai. These people are people who are well akin to bartering among themselves. If one guy can hunt, he doesn't do well in growing vegetables. Another person grows vegetables, and I was in that loop, and it was fun because, you know, too much. I caught too much fish. You know, hey, you want some of this? Oh, sure, take it. They don't charge you anything. Next couple of days on your doorstep, there's a whole bunch of vegetables piled up, and it's just the way things work. Interesting, but those outer islands, those smaller outer islands like Molokai and Lanai, which are, have a way of doing things that are compatible to living together. And I've seen that also in at my trip to Bali. Bali, where this whole village sort of, you know, gets together and shares their resources. And it makes money not as important. Money was important for them to get the newest computer or something, the newest cell phone or something. But as far as base survival, food, water, shelter, they had no problem with that, without money.
Isn't that interesting? You're watching National Geographic Channel, and here you got some guys that look like they're just right out of Neanderthal, and they're in the woods in the 21st century, and you think, oh, geez, what's your life? How sad your life must be not to have an iPhone and an Xbox and this and that, you know, or be one of them big Wall Street bankers driving to work in your limo, and then something goes wrong, and then society collapses. How many Wall Street bankers, how many radio DJs like myself, how many of us could survive for a week under those type of circumstances? We claim we're first world countries now. If something really goes bad, we're all going to be third world countries in a heartbeat. And the people in the third world countries who have to struggle every day to survive, they've been doing this for generations. They're going to be way ahead of the game and much, in my opinion, easier to adapt to a lousy situation than all of us.
Absolutely. That's absolutely true. So when we look at, you know, the feathers hitting a fan, actually, it would be the city people who are involved, not in base, kind of normal survival things, exchanging goods and services, away from the financial system, you know, banking system, bartering. These are people who are way ahead, people who have no idea about that. But it's interesting that those that do and have moved in, I remember the hippie culture back in the 60s that we came here into Maui. We had a place called Banana Patch. And there was a whole bunch of people created communes, and they did essentially come from backgrounds that rejected their parents' way, which was very materialistic, this sort of city. So many of them were, I remember going to a friend of mine's store, a nice shop he has over here. It sells marine products and boats and stuff like that. And he says he was lying underneath a coconut tree wondering what he was going to do. It's probably it evolved and he understood business, but he also had a reset in terms of what life was about back then as a hippie. And they catch on to, you know, this lifestyle pretty fast, so getting in a commune concept, it can happen really quick, overnight.
Well, the television cable channels are exploding with reality TV shows. There's three or four of them now, all about, you know, what, showing people that, oh, I suppose years ago, most of us would have thought we're completely insane, but now we're not, you know, we're kind of watching that one eye going, you know what, maybe that lady knows something I don't know.
Well, yeah, that's exactly true, and that's exactly what I'm saying. It's happened in, you know, major cities in Japan, foreign countries like Japan, because it's an inevitability that they're just not sure when, but they feel it's going to be sometime. And whether it's, you know, an earthquake or terrible weather, I mean, just rainstorms that flood all places, and landslides because of the tremendously wet mountainside, people have realized that, made you know, made their lives at least bearable to an extent, to try to survive through some of these things over a long period. I remember seeing how people lay out their homes in places like Hana, which has on the island of Maui, which has a very tropical atmosphere, and landslides are common, and how they you know, keep them away from the slopes and stuff, and lay out in a, far away from places that could, you know, cover them up with landslides, and landslides being the primary problem, as well as tsunami. You know, so they're, if they're at the ocean, they're well above it. Yeah, the ocean may be down a few, you know, feet maybe, but they're away from them. But it's all, you know, people give people enough time, you know, they're prepared to make the right common sense choices, and that's what it's all about. To be in denial is something that is going to catch people perhaps unawares. But more and more, I guess, things are coming forward to get people to understand that this planet will not be destroyed. It will undergo a type of change, and the most important change is the way we do business. And that has enslaved the planet away from the celestial ascension process. In other words, the real purpose of human life has been harnessed by the bankers, essentially, for their own gain, for the gain of the system, and the system being the ultimate good. But that's not true, because as I said earlier, there wasn't the kind of consumption that we have here on our planet. They have all of those things, but not necessarily so open and blatant. And it was like my comment when I was shown my dwelling, the place, they said, this is your place that you live. One like it, they showed it being constructed, and it wasn't very large. And my concept was that my immediate idea was it's not very big. And they looked back at me and said, what do you need it any bigger for? It's plenty big for what you need. And I said, what do you, what do you need? And we had a little discussion on what they need. And it says, whatever we need, we have. And it's, you know, interesting. And ownership of property sometimes comes down toward responsibility, I guess. It's not really ownership. And you need a lift, or you want to go back to planet Earth or Rancha? Well, let's go, you know, jump on, and you got a UFO to go back on. And it's not, you don't have to own one and put it in your garage. This is an interesting concept. It's different from the society that we have. And that in order for them to bring this higher consciousness into our planet, this enslavement concept by the banking system has to change.
See, I've always thought that was a great way to run a society. Once you were able to get to that point, or even more on a more basic level, if everybody had enough food to eat, if everybody had a place to safe place to sleep at night, a home, you know, if everybody had the basic needs of life provided to them, then, you know, a lot of the society changes. All the pressures and stuff, the egos and the downfalls of society, of people trying to collect stuff, trying to get one better or a better place or this, or the greed of society. You know, when you describe these celestials and how they live, millions of years ago, they probably figured out how to give everybody anything they wanted at all. Anything at all you can dream up, we can make for you. And then what happens? When you get to that point, we can't even conceive of a world that way, where whatever I snap my fingers, it comes, you know, there it is. It's provided to me. I just can't help speculating on what a wonderful, different existence it would be if we weren't just consumers.
Exactly. Yeah. Although, you know, it sort of follows the mortal animal nature. I mean, you gotta, you know, eat to live. The concept of consumption is there, so it would be a sort of natural progression to have something else, you know, be manufactured, be part of that characteristic. But it's also part of theirs. I mean, they have needs that are required, like food needs or energy needs, regeneration needs, that actually extend their lives well beyond, you know, thousands of years. But it is a whole different idea when it's like that, a whole different paradigm, a way of doing things. It's like the newness of expression comes out as a harder thing to come by, and that's one of the things that they notice about our planet is we are very inventive and expressive and we have artistry, and everything has art, and everything has a way of appealing, and can be just a little adjustment here, and it looks like it was a big or a major adjustment that needs to be done, and may put me very much that in terms of our Mayan calendar, a real adjustment in terms of our place in the universe, I think that's primarily it. Our place in the universe will change.
Well, I know there's a bunch of you guys like me. When I was going through school, I had to pull an all-nighter because I didn't have a term paper done or I didn't study for finals. And you're taking diet pills. What do you call those black beauties, ionamines? You're up for 3 days, man. Well, anyway, stupid stuff you do because you put things off to the last minute. So if somebody said to me, Z-Man, what do you got? What kind of storage you got? What kind of preparations have you made? Now I got guns and I got bullets. And I got, I don't know, probably a couple packs of ramen noodles in my fridge and some cat food. You know, if it hit the fan tomorrow, I'm toast. I'll have to go steal it from somebody. Well, I mean, if it meant saving my family, I'd take the gun and go get it, right? I mean, it wouldn't necessarily have to take all their food, but I'd take something. At any rate, and I wonder how many people tuning in tonight, even though they listen to these programs, have really taken any steps whatsoever to prepare for something that would go wrong. I was listening to a political commentary. It must have been probably about Mitt Romney, but it was more importantly about the Mormon religion. And I thought it was fascinating that, according to this essayist, the Mormon religion teaches the practice of, I don't want to say storage, but putting away foodstuffs, fuels, putting away a bank of goods. And that's part of what they teach in their communities. Now, I had not heard this before, and I hope I hope the person that wrote this essay was accurate about that. But, you know, I think that's great that I grew up Catholic. I don't think there's any doctrine in the Catholic faith that says you should put away a bunch of your food and have stores in case something goes wrong. Prepare for the worst. Have you heard of that?
Oh, yeah, I'm relatively close to many Mormons. And that's just common practice. And if you wanted to learn anything about that, they're the best people to learn from because they know how to use it. In other words, it doesn't get stale, so they rotate it. And essentially, it's just a bigger shelf, a bigger storage area for things they use commonly, and as well as some things that don't, you know, really have a very long shelf life. But those that have shorter shelf lives, they don't waste. So they have a way of doing things and using things. That is, to me, more expert than, and they got probably the best kinds of knowledge and experience behind that. So they'd be great teachers for figuring out how to do it.
Well, folks,
another thing important about the Mormon faith, the Mormon religion, or the Mormon way of life is they're somewhat communal. In other words, they don't mind being together and supporting each other. This is an important factor that the communal or community concept of sharing is a matter of getting through those times. And it will be not because you're holding everything up all by your little lonesome. It could be that if you're stuck way up in the mountain in some log cabin or something. But when it comes down to cities or the organization of a group of people makes a lot of difference in how people make it through.
Yes, I'm blacklisted. The Mormon missionaries are no longer allowed to come to my home, but I love them anyway. You are welcome here anytime. If you guys want to come back, you're welcome. That's a whole other story for another show. I do respect the Mormon religion. We had some missionaries show up, and we had a big discussion about religion, and they went and packed up their goods and went back to Salt Lake City that day. Uh-oh. And now they're not allowed to come talk to me anymore. Oops. It was just a fun discussion about religion, about all the religions of the world. Anyway, folks, this broadcast is here for you to take in the information and make up any choice, make any decision on what we talk about that you see fit. We're not trying to convert anybody. We're not here to bash any religion. We love the Mormons. We love the Jews. We love the Muslims and Christians. We love all of you guys. All right. So I want to make sure that on every single broadcast, I take the time to mention that Michael does this program because he told his celestial friends that he would do this program. He is living up to his word. We do not accept any advertisers on this program, and Artist First is happy to pay for the broadcast cost and bandwidth. And I think on behalf of all of our listeners, Michael, it's with our sincere appreciation that you do this show every week, and we thank you from the bottom of our hearts.
You're certainly welcome, and I really appreciate the opportunity to share, and so do the Celestials, who impart a lot of times pressure to get a certain point out. In every program, there's some point they wanted to get out, and it gets out.
You know, with that big Powerball drawing the other day, I was going to call, Michael, man, can you get a hold of one of them guys? Come on, it's $600 million. Just one time. And none of those people have come forward. I think it would ruin your life. It would be great, but it would also be, life would change, I don't know, for the better. But that's a topic for another show. Coming up, folks, at after the CBS News, it's Artie Kornfeld's Spirit of Woodstock Nation. I think Andy Gomes is his guest tonight. That'll be following in about 5 minutes. Michael, you stay well, and we look forward to our next broadcast. And everybody, thanks for tuning in. This is okay. Z-Man. Thanks, Michael.
Yeah, next broadcast, we'll make it next week.
Oh, and we didn't mention, there are two other places you can hear Michael. One is the Hello Earth broadcast with Curtis Cooperman, and the other is BroadcastUrantia.com. So if you can't get enough, go listen to all these archives and all those archives, and you'll get all the information you need. Thank you, Michael.
Okay, aloha.